You guys, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books was nominated for a Webby Award, which is this really prestigious award that I am dying to win. And there's a People's Voice component, and you can vote and get me from number two, second place, to first place. But you have to vote. Please go to vote.webbys.com. Vote.webbys.com, but it's kind of complicated, so it might be easier just to go to zibbyowens.com or my Instagram at zibbyowens, where it'll always be in my stories and it's in one of those little circle highlights. Please, please, please vote. Voting ends April 18th and I'm in second place, so please vote for best individual episode, talk show, interview show. Thank you so much.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Today's episode has been sponsored by Jay McLaughlin. Jay McLaughlin is a timeless lifestyle brand with incredible style and a spirit of connection. I am obsessed with Jay McLaughlin and have been so honored that they are sponsoring my Zibbyverse tour. It just so happens that the tour goes to so many communities and areas of the country that have Jay McLaughlin stores. And I love that the brand is philanthropic through Jay McLaughlin's local and loyal programming. Host store events to give back to organizations that are meaningful to Jay McLaughlin's local communities. I also love the fact that the clothes are just so chic. They make me feel polished and modern. And the best part is that most of the line comes in fabrics that don't wrinkle. I especially love the dresses, the cashmere sweaters, the other sweaters. You'll see them all over my Instagram. I typically tag at Jay McLaughlin. And so you can check it out. It is absolutely one of my favorite brands, and I am over the moon excited to be working with them. In fact, I want to share the love with all of you. Jay McLaughlin is giving 20% off new customers and listeners of my podcast with special code ZIBBY20. Capital ZIBBY 20. That's 20% off for new customers and listeners of the podcast with special code capital Z Zibby 20. Take advantage of it today. My favorites are this white, open, long cashmere sweater that I've been wearing on every flight that I've taken on this tour. I have a blue with light blue horizontal striped sweater, several dresses I even wore on Good Morning America. Check it out, Jay McLaughlin. Thanks so much.
Hi, this is Zibby Owens, and you're listening to the award-winning podcast, Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. I'm also the host of Moms Don't Have Time to Lose Weight, and I'm the editor of the anthology, which you should run out and buy, called Moms Don't Have Time To, a quarantine anthology. All proceeds of that book go to COVID-19 vaccine research. And I'm the editor-in-chief of Moms Don't Have Time to Write, a new publication on Medium, and we're accepting submissions, so please send your personal essays there. And if all that isn't enough, you can follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens, and my website is zibbyowens.com. Okay, now back to this amazing podcast. Sarah Arnell is the author of There Will Be Lobster, Memoir of a Midlife Crisis. While working alongside acclaimed fashion icon Andre Leontali at Vanity Fair magazine in her mid-20s, by the way, Andre Leontali was also on this podcast, so you can search back and listen to that, Sarah was offered an opportunity to write a press release for fashion designer Donna Karan. This moment marked the beginning of Sarah's impressive 30-year career in fashion, writing, and advertising. Sarah worked as chief strategy officer at one of New York's most renowned and successful advertising agencies, eventually rising to CEO. Today, Sarah is a professor at the New School's Parsons School of Design and continues to consult with the world's top brands on marketing strategy and brand design. Sarah has a BA from Skidmore College and an MFA from Sarah Lawrence College. She is the mother of three children and one small poodle. Welcome, Sarah. Thanks so much for coming on Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books to discuss There Will Be Lobster, Memoir of a Midlife Crisis.
Thank you so much for having me, Zibby. I am thrilled to be here.
Oh, it's such a pleasure for me. Memoir of a Midlife Crisis. I feel like I was just saying this to my husband yesterday. Like, I feel like I didn't identify as middle-aged until now. Like, I fought it from my early 40s, and now I'm just like, okay, I've accepted it, and now I'm embracing it. When did you feel like, that happened or what?
I mean, I felt it. You know, I felt like I wasn't happy with the way my body looked. I was having hot flashes that were out of control. So midlife crisis to me was more of a life stage. It came at that time of life where everything's changing for you. Like your kids are leaving home, you know, your work is looking differently. Your body is changing and not in a good way. And, you know, and so that's sort of what identified it for me.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, I should have said the person we were having dinner with responded by saying, I felt like I knew I was in middle age when every morning a different body part would hurt me.
Exactly.
Which I also completely relate to, you know. Well, tell listeners about what your book is about and when you knew you wanted to write a book. I know you've had a storied career in advertising as well and, you know, so much stuff. But when did you know you wanted to write a book? Did you always know you wanted to write a book? That was like 10 questions. So, you know.
No. So I didn't really ever have an intention of writing a book. But at a certain point, where I went through this, and the book is about this really hard period in my life, like a really difficult, probably 4 years or so in my life that were hard to manage. And I suddenly felt like, and maybe it was the pandemic that caused it with everybody sitting inside and, you know, talking a lot about how they were feeling. I started to feel that I needed to take responsibility for that journey that I went on. And I actually wanted to really put it out there in the world too. Give meaning to the pain and give meaning to the growth that came from the pain. And for me, that was about sort of why I wanted to write the book, because when you take responsibility for your own actions, you also take responsibility for the other people in your life that your actions kind of affected. So that's really what I wanted to do. And it was a healing process for me.
Now that it's done and out there, are you like nervous about that? Or you feel okay with it? Or like, what is your feeling now that you got it all out?
Well, I got it all out and I put everything out. And yeah, so I'm definitely nervous because I tell some stories that, you know, they're not things to be proud of, but at the same time, I don't want them to shame me anymore. So I'm trying to think about this thing that I did, this thing that I put out into the world as something for self-empowerment, not shame. That's what I hope other people will see too. Hopefully.
There's some famous quote or someone said it on my podcast the other day, something like good writing is the secrets you don't want to tell. And great writing is the secrets that you don't even admit to yourself or something like that. I have to look it up, but I don't know. It's like along these lines, right? Like the more you share,
I get it. And then I spent my career in advertising, you know, so I got really, really, really good at like putting that facade, you know, in advertising, you never tell the whole story. You only tell what you want people to hear about your brand or your product and what attributes you want to focus on and benefits you want to focus on. And I kind of think I did that to myself. I sort of just put on my advertising hat and kind of went out there in the world and, you know, hid behind this facade. And I thought it was time to just strip it away. You know, we are in the age of transparency now. So even I was like, I need to sort of do that to me right now. I need to get transparent. Everything I went through, and you know, and I wasn't going to hold back. And for me, I think one of the secrets of writing, and if I ever had to give any advice to writers, is bring it. Do not hold back. Don't hold back because you think you're going to save it for another book. No. Don't hold back because you think you're going to be embarrassed. You won't. You'll feel liberated. You know, don't, there's a million reasons why you shouldn't hold back. You'll be empowered. Self-empowerment is an incredible thing you get from honestly and openly telling your story.
Great. Well, good. I won't ask you that at the end then. Thank you. I wanted to read a passage from here, which is great, if you don't mind. So you write, I was beginning to disappear into my own head. I wanted to cover all my mirrors with black cloth and stop the clocks. I wanted to mourn the passing of the self I used to be. I promised myself that in the future, when someone told me they were depressed or sad, I would never say the words cheer up. I couldn't think of a more useless and unhelpful suggestion. I was sick of hearing it. I felt ashamed for all of my own past lackluster efforts, the way I'd always deflected requests for help or advice from someone who was feeling down. I had been ignorant to the realities of depression and sorry for anyone that had ever come to me for assistance. I was unsympathetic and cold. I didn't get it. I wished I could go back in time, knowing what I do now, knowing how I feel now, knowing that I could never cheer up just because someone told me to. I had no reason or motivation to do anything except look in the mirror and gasp at what I had let myself become, or rather, what I would not let myself become. I didn't think I deserved happiness or joy or contentment. I could not cheer up. Oh.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about how you felt sort of like at your low point, and also what you've learned in that now you know what to say to other people. What can we all do when other people we all love and care about are going through things in something similar?
Yeah. Well, you know, how many times have you said to I've said it to my children, oh, cheer up, you'll be fine. Oh, you know, put on a happy face and get out there. And sometimes like there's sadness and there's depression and they're really different. And you have to really pay attention to the differentiation. If somebody's just upset about something that happened, then sure, maybe you can give them that advice. Say, oh, you know what, cheer up, get over it, whatever you want to say to them. But if it's not just sort of an incident that occurred that just has them annoyed, and this is pervasive feeling of loss and low self-esteem and loneliness, and people are coming to you to ask you, how do I feel better, not how do I solve this incident that happened, then it's really something to really think about in terms of giving them sort of, you know, the space they need to talk to you about their feelings and not just brushing it off and say, oh, just go away and cheer up, because it won't help anyone. It's actually way, way too dismissive for somebody that needs that kind of help.
So true.
And it was really hard for me because I realized that in myself, that I did that to other people. And I also realized that other people had done it to me as well. Mm-hmm. So it was a real realization that it was this thing out there that people didn't fully understand what depression looked like. And it looks different for everybody, right? So it's not really easy to kind of pinpoint.
Very true.
Listening helps, really listening to someone.
How do your kids feel about this book?
Well, their names are not mentioned, as you notice. So they were happy to participate, but at a bit of an arm's length. They're completely supportive of it. So they really have all read it and looked at it. They know every story that I tell about them in it, where it kind of links to my life. You know, and it's funny because I had said to my daughter the other day, like, gosh, you know, I'm not sure I ever realized I was going through a midlife crisis until I wrote the book. And she just looked at me and said, well, you're the only one who didn't then. I was just like, okay. So they really were, you know, part and parcel involved in every step of the way of the writing of this book.
Wow. Thank you. What's like the PS, or like what happened between the book ending and now? Like, what's the conclusion?
So the conclusion is you've got everything you need inside you to make the change that you want. I think my book in essence is about change. What to change, can you change, how to change, do you even know what you need to change? And that any kind of external search, you know, I felt like I was always out there searching for something. And what I really finally realized at the end was when I tell the story about the former Buddhist monk that I met, who said, when I asked him how he left the monkhood, he said, I just took off my robe and walked away. And for me, you know, that was a decision he made. So I think that change starts with sort of a decision and realizing that you have it inside you to change how you see things, change your perspective on things, be more present with yourself in the moment, and then the things around you start to change.
So what about if someone's feeling like they're in this place right now? Not that depression necessarily,
yeah,
but just like I mean, there's so many of us out there. Like, what are we doing with our lives? Like, this is such an interesting life stage, which you hit on so well in the book. And like, it's an intersection of all these different things, starting and ending and identity and, you know, everything is like thrown up in the air. Like, we're taking a basket of popcorn and like, whoosh, there's like, you know, where it's like, we're like waiting for it all to fly back down and hit us, you know? I don't know. Like, would you, if you looked back, could you have done it any differently? What would you have done differently? Like, what, I don't know. Not that you have to be some sort of sage, you know, expert on this topic, but.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. As kids get older, some things about parenting can get easier. I mean, not many, but some. But others don't, like having conversations about money. Point is, kids won't really know how to manage their money unless they're actually in charge of it, and that is where Greenlight can help. Greenlight is a debit card and money app made for families. Parents can send money to their kids and keep an eye on their kids' spending and saving, while kids and teens build money confidence and lifelong financial literacy skills. With the Greenlight app, kids can learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely, thanks to games that teach money skills in a fun and accessible way. I got Greenlight debit cards for my kids. The greatest thing, you can actually add their photos that take up half the card. So when I handed the cards to the kids, they were like, this is so exciting. So they look great. Unfortunately, I only put the required 2 cents on at the beginning to make sure they worked. So the kids were like, well, what should I spend my 2 cents on? Anyway, millions of parents and kids are learning about money on Greenlight. It's the easy, convenient way for parents to raise financially smart kids and families to navigate life together. Sign up for Greenlight today and get your first month free when you go to greenlight.com/Zibby. That's greenlight.com/Zibby to try Greenlight for free. Greenlight.com/Zibby.
Well, you know, I had made such a mess in my life. You know, I didn't have a job anymore. My youngest child was leaving for college. I didn't feel the way I wanted to feel. I didn't look the way I wanted to look. And I became really obsessed with, you know, being young seeming. And I really think that was a little bit of my downfall. I mean, to the point where, you know, I party one New Year's Eve all night with my son and his friend. The opening chapter.
I know.
Not do that again. But it was this sort of pressure I felt to feel vital and vibrant and youthful. And a lot of that came with wanting to feel young. And just, we're such a visually driven world sometimes that I think it just, and I came from the world of media and advertising, and I really think I got in my own way.
So tell me a little more about the process of writing this book and how long it took and where you were when you wrote it and all of that. And then how it became a published book, like the publication journey.
So I was reading a lot. And, you know, I always read. So I started reading books and I was reading fiction, and I have my MFA in fiction, not memoir. So I read a ton of fiction. I love the dialogue. I love the sort of pace of fiction. But then I also started reading like Joan Didion and The Year of Magical Thinking. And I was just wanting to finally, you know, and COVID was, again, a time of real self-reflection for me as well as so many other people. And I just said, I'm going to just tell the story and that I went through, and maybe somebody can relate to it. So I actually offer no advice at all in the book. But in a way, it can still be a bit of a self-help book. There's no tips and there's no tricks and there's none of that. But if you can relate to some of the things I did or some of the ways I was feeling and some of the stories I'm telling, then maybe you can garner something from that and not feel so alone or feel like you can do what you need to do too to get back on track, or, you know, get some sense of sort of help and hope from this book. So in me, I kind of approached it from the point of view of going to be my story kind of in a self-help book, but it's a self-help book disguised as story and anecdote in a way. I don't know if that makes sense to you. So yeah, so that's how I did it. And I sat down and I wrote and I read and I read and I read this great book called The Perfect Nanny. I'm sure you've read it.
Yeah, I actually haven't. I shouldn't admit that. But yes, I own it. I bought it, but I never ended up reading it. And I should go back to it.
Well, the opening line is a tough one. The opening line of the book is, the baby is dead. And I was just like, oh, like we don't have to wait to get to the tragedy. And so that was one of the things that actually really inspired me. I'm going to start my book with the trauma, with the event that really caused me to just wake up and have to change. So I took inspiration from what I was reading, and I just tried to structure the story more in a way of how you kind of go through life, where you do something and then you think of something that happened in the past. So I'll jump back in time a little because it's living in my mind and it's sort of influencing the present. And then we'll go about the day a little bit more and something else will come to me and I'll write about it. So it's very much, I think, of an internal dialogue with myself.
Interesting. And tell me about it being published.
So I finished it during the pandemic and wrote the book and I finished it. I had a great first draft of a manuscript, I thought. And I sent it to an agent who sent it around and a publisher said, yeah, let's do it.
And that was it. All right. So what is your plan in life now? Personal and professional.
So personal, I still work in advertising, but just, you know, I do a lot of consulting. So I keep really busy and I keep very current in the field. I teach at Parsons at the new school and I teach marketing and branding and advertising, which I love because I love the students and I love working with them and understanding how they consume media and how they, you know, get their information and then disseminate it into the world. So I'm definitely continuing to teach and, you know, maybe I have another book in me soon, but I'm really not fully sure what, but if it's not a book, I'm always writing. Like I'm writing articles, I'm writing essay, I'm sitting down every day to continue to write.
And what do you like to read?
Right now, I'm reading Animal.
Uh-huh. So good.
Which is great.
And it's intense, very intense.
And she's in advertising, which is sort of like great. And I was also reading the book by, let me about to get the title right, Nancy Jo Sales book, My Secret Life.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dating app. Very, very, very funny. So those are the two that I'm reading right now.
Excellent. Great. Okay. Well, I know you've given a lot of advice on a lot of different topics, and I'm sorry for continuing to ask.
No, I'm qualified.
That's okay. I like it. Actually, I'm curious about what the people in your class and their media consumption has taught you about like how best to leverage social media, you know, as an author and how to use, you know, because obviously being an author is an exercise in marketing in and of itself and advertising a book, you know, that's your product. What insights do you have there? What has your experience been or what can you know what I mean?
Well, they're skeptical. They're completely skeptical of advertising. And most of the time they have an ad blocker on and they block it. So it gets a little challenging teaching a class called Advertising in Contemporary Culture when your entire student classroom doesn't watch, like, or participate in advertising. So what it actually really teaches you is that you have to bring them what you want them to see and what you want them to pay attention to. You have to bring it to them in the world of media that they're participating in. And it's social media. It's a lot of them are on sites like Reddit. They love a site like that. They will pay attention to an ad if it's served to them, if somehow it's made relevant to them and it's not too hard of a sell. So between reaching them in the media that they're consuming and giving them the message that they're willing to listen to, it's a slog, and that's how you do it.
Interesting. Wow. Reaching the right people. But the thing is, advertising is a service when it gives you what you are looking for, right? Like it can be.
Yes.
So anyway, I'm like fascinated. I used to be in marketing and advertising and I don't know. It's really fun and great.
Yeah.
It's really fun.
It's really changing though. You have to really just be so agile in order to really kind of, you know, be aware of all the new platforms that are emerging and how those platforms are working. And, you know, there's some platforms that you don't necessarily have to participate in all of them.
Right.
If you don't feel like they vibe with you or they're right for you. Like I am not on TikTok, although I watch it constantly. I have decided it's just not for me to start posting on it, at least not yet. And so, but I'm aware of all that stuff and how it's being used.
Interesting. All right. Awesome. Well, Sarah, thank you. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for talking about There Will Be Lobster. Thanks for being like just so open in this book about what it's really like and what it was like for you, especially during some really awful parts of your life and everything. So anyway, thanks for all of it.
Well, thanks for letting me chat about it all. I really appreciate it.
No problem. All right. Take care.
Thank you, Zibby.
Okay. Bye, Sarah.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram at Zibby Owens and at Moms Don't Have Time to Read Books. Also sign up for my newsletter at ZibbyOwens.com and sign up for my virtual book club and meet lots of authors on Zoom every other week. Thanks so much to Steve and Ryan at Texture Sound for the sound editing. And thank you to Morning Moon Productions for providing this fantastic intro and outro music.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.